Blog Talk Radio.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. That which touches me most is that I had a chance to work with people, passing on to others that which was passed on to me. They have the courage where we fail. And if I can but shed some light as they carry us through the gate. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who
blessings, and welcome to another installment of the Gist of Freedom is Faith. My name is R. Lee Gordon of Unity Design and the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo, and as many know, my calling and mission is to prove Black America has all the necessary resources to improve the quality of life and learning for our young generation. As always, this show is produced by acclaimed historian, educator, and author Leslie Gist Etheridge and serves as a weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people past and present, Black and white, who are through faith and focus, persevering in preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, and the humanities. And I'd like to think that by following the majestic path of our heritage and culture, we can collectively reach brighter futures and a better planet and instill in us all a greater sense of pride, power, and purpose. I would like to thank you all for joining us tonight and welcome you to be a part of our discussion by calling in with your comments to 347-324-5552. That's 347-324-5552. Now, before we begin tonight's show, let me first make a much-needed confession. There are very few souls out there of whom I'm truly jealous. Michael Jackson, Al Green, Marvin Gaye, and Luther, and their singing voices come to mind in this capacity. I would like to suggest that sculptor Vinnie Bagwell has been duly added to this list. Imagine the ability to take an idea that is first manifested between one's ears, to take one's eyes and see something from a simple ball of clay or bronze, and to take one's hands and create detailed, magnificent, and lasting gifts to share with the world. That is, in many ways, tonight's guest, Vinnie Bagwell, and this incredible ability that she has to bring art to life. Miss Bagwell, thank you for joining us on the Gist of Freedom is Faith.
Well, good evening. I'm absolutely flattered and delighted to be here.
Well, thank you. And we are as delighted to have you on the Gist of Freedom is Faith, and to let our listeners learn more about this incredible project that you're currently working on called The Enslaved African's Rain Garden. Now, before we begin our conversation, I want to share with our listeners your website address. I believe it's enslavedafricansraingarden.org. Is that correct?
That is it.
I have been looking at this website on and off for the last month or so as we first met on Facebook, and I am just completely blown away by the magnitude of your creativity.
Well, thank you, thank you. I have to say that Facebook has been a marvelous medium to be able to connect with a very broad audience. I mean, it has absolutely turned into a global experience. People talk to me from all over the world, and thank goodness I have a translator in my computer, so, you know, people talk to me in Spanish and Portuguese and French and Italian, and they want to hold, you know, great discussions about how the artwork makes them feel and the meaning of having this project, you know, coming into fruition. It's just been really the most extraordinary experience, I have to say.
Well, I think there is a global commonality in the quality and the personification, if you will, of your project and your work.
Well, this is what I'm learning. You know, it's one thing to think something. It's another thing to discover that what you think is really true, that other people believe the same thing that you do. You know, in this particular instance, I became aware the city councilwoman here in Yonkers, New York, brought it to my attention back in 2009 that, you know, the first enslaved Africans were freed by law here in Westchester County, New York. And, I mean, I've grown up here, and I never knew that, so I found that extremely intriguing. And then, of course, when I learned that it was the first law that was created regarding slavery in the country, and that it was the first law to free slaves in the country, you know, I was like, that's important. And it's not in the curriculum, you know, in the public school curriculum. You don't find it in most of the history books. There's not a lot of information on slavery, you know, local information. And so it was the beginning of, you know, a need to really understand, well, you know, what exactly is out there. And I was absolutely appalled and astounded when I realized there are no public art projects, there are no major public art commissions that honor enslaved Africans as a group, their contributions in this country. I mean, I still find myself checking every now and then, Googling, trying to figure out, is it something that I'm missing? I find that absolutely astounding in 2010.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. But I recall, and maybe you can speak to this a little bit, about the real Statue of Liberty being a tribute to slaves or slavery, and then being altered in its final stages to represent something completely different.
Yes, I was in Paris in 2008, and it was very interesting. I was there for a wedding and was taking a cab back to the hotel, and, you know, I'm practicing my French, and I'm talking to the cab driver, and I'm telling him that I'm a sculptor. And he said, do you mind if I take you by the studio of the artist that made the Statue of Liberty? And I'm like, are you serious? And he began to tell me a little bit about, you know, the original intention, you know, for that sculpture. You know, and I was awestruck. I'm sitting there looking at the studio thinking, it's so incredible how things, well, start, and then, of course, how they sometimes turn out.
Right. And I think that the work that you are currently a part of really speaks to the fact that too much of our history, as you suggested in this conversation, is a hidden jewel that if we bring to light and we bring to life and let shine through, can truly help all of us glow.
Yeah, and I
would love go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I have to interject that that's the easy part. What I have discovered is that, you know, people feel that way, but the question is, who is going to do it? You know,
correct.
People have ideas about what should be and what we need, but ultimately the question is, who's going to do it?
Amen. And it is good souls like you. I'd like to thank good souls like Leslie. I certainly try to do my part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, today more than ever before, I suggest that it's no longer a numbers game as it may have been during the Civil Rights Movement and other critical junctures in our heritage and history in this country specifically. But today it's going to take the best of us who are still willing to work on behalf of the rest of us.
Yes.
And it is through conversations like our discussion tonight that we hope to enlighten those to be a part of the process, but more so to be a part of the progress.
Yes.
And so without further ado, based on our limited time, I really want to begin to talk about the development of the enslaved Africans' rain garden, which is right here in our backyard in New York City. It's in Yonkers, correct?
This is in Yonkers, which is Westchester County, just north of New York City. We're like a half hour out of Manhattan.
Okay, so this is a trip that any Big Appleist can easily make.
We are right on the Hudson River. You take the Metro North. It's a 33-minute ride from Grand Central Station. You land literally here.
Okay.
This
is a multi-million dollar urban heritage public art project.
Yes.
And speak to what that means.
Well, urban heritage is, Yonkers is a very old city. It was founded in the early 1600s, and the Phillips family was one of the first people to live here. Myself and many people, we did not realize that the Phillips Manor Hall, which is a 400-some-odd-year-old house that still stands, many of us did not know that the Phillips family was the largest slave trader and slaveholder in the country, second behind South Carolina. Most people think that New York didn't have slavery, and of course many of us know that it did, but many people don't know how the Phillips family figured in that business, I'll just simply say it, and that's pretty much what it was. And so once I begin to learn that, I'm talking to the mayor of the city, you know, because the Yonkers is a waterfront town that's in the midst of revitalization. They've been working on revitalizing the downtown waterfront for, you know, 20 years or so. And they're looking for good ideas that will bring people to this area. And they've been supporting and fostering the arts for quite some time. You know, in 1996, I created Ella Fitzgerald, and, you know, working with an arts organization that we had created to bring culture to this area. So the city is amenable to culture. And in this particular instance, you know, my suggestion to them was, if you're going to create something in the downtown waterfront, I feel that it should have some meaning to the place. It should be site-specific.
Mm-hmm.
Add to it that in this particular instance, this subject matter about the enslaved Africans is nationally significant. It's not just about local history or New York history. It's national history. That makes it worth the while for a lot of people to come at least one time.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect of it was, you know, I'm sensitive to the idea of green advocacy. You know, because we're a waterfront town and, you know, we're interested in water conservation and we're interested in, you know, being responsible to the planet and all that, one of the first things that occurred to me is, like, I want this project to fit that matrix. I had just moved back to New York from Columbia, Maryland. Maryland's very big on biodiversity, and I had learned about rain gardens there. Basically, rain gardens are designed to utilize the rain to be self-sustaining. From the city's vantage point, that's a good thing because that means they don't have to irrigate. They don't have to maintain it. It's self-sustaining. And so once we create it, you know, certainly they'll have to do things like, you know, clean, you know, pick up garbage and things like that, but they won't have to really do very much more to it to, you know, to make it work. And that's an important aspect. So there are many facets to this particular project. The other important thing, you know, that I've been aware of for a number of years is that there's no sculpting curriculum in the public schools. It just doesn't exist. And for somebody like myself who is untutored, you know, there are days when I think to myself, what if I had been introduced to sculpting when I was 16? You know, I started sculpting when I was 36. What if I had started when I was a teenager? I mean, who would I be now? You know,
right.
What
and, you
difference
know,
would that
and,
have
and
made?
Ms. Bagwell, and, mm-hmm. And as a youth advocate and someone who is very passionate about my work to build better communities and brighter futures for our
mm-hmm.
children,
yes.
let me gracefully segue to talk a little bit more about, firstly, every child is a gift, but also, more importantly, is that every child has a gift. And we'd like to talk about you in your early stages. You
mm-hmm.
mentioned you were born in Yonkers, New York.
Right.
Tell us how you became this incredible sculptor able to capture so much in your art.
I was born in Yonkers, but I grew up in the town of Greenburg, which if you're in New York, you say Greenburg, and if you're outside of New York, you say White Plains, because that's the post office.
Got you. I was
going to
ask
the Hartsfield,
the okay.
Greenburg Central 7 school system, which at that time was an extraordinary school system. They believed very much in experiential learning. And so, you know, I started off one of those little kids that could draw very well. It was a very long time before I realized that my parents are artists, too. They were funny because they only made art every now and then when they felt like it. Like my mother would come home with something that she had retrieved out of the trash, and the next thing you know, she's turning an old discarded shade into something beautiful that's hanging in the bathroom, you know. I remember the first time she decided she was going to paint a mural on the wall, and I'm like, what's a mural? You know, and can I watch? You know, my father would paint signs when he was selling us cars, and, you know, he was very much into lettering and things like that. And so I thought everybody could draw and paint because I saw it all the time. And so, of course, you know, being the best illustrator in my class from second grade or whatever, I realized everybody couldn't draw as well as I could. I didn't know why. I just knew that's how it was. Senior year in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let me chime in because you mentioned something called experiential learning that I
yes.
think is that we speak to
mm-hmm.
because it's something that is one of the deficiencies in too much of today's educational system.
Right.
Can
in,
you speak to that
okay,
a little, please?
Fast forward, in eighth grade when I got to high school, because in those days, well, they, you know, kept changing when middle school and high school is going to be, so I was in high school in eighth grade. They introduced us to the idea of mentorship. The English teacher chairman was my mentor. And I remember her saying to me, you're a good student. I want you to take every writing course we offer because if you can write, you can be successful in anything you want to do. You'll get straight A's through college because you know how to write. I think you can do this. And, of course, being an eighth grader, I was like, okay, and I did. And it was funny, very funny, because years later they called me into, you know, they were honoring her for something, and I had to say to her, everything I am is because of you. I made her cry. You know, I said, you told me what to do, and I did it, and it worked. You know, in my senior year, I wrote a 100-page paper on black English. This is before the idea of Ebonics, you know. I went to college for a semester to learn about language in senior year, experiential learning. This brings me back to this particular project. I feel that creative students, and there are a lot of kids that are artists, creative students, it's helpful for them if they meet somebody who's from their planet, of their kind, who talks their language. Because a lot of time, being an artist as a kid is lonely because nobody else really gets you.
Wow. And it is also such a personal thing that it's very difficult at times to share that which you create.
You know, you're thinking thoughts outside the box, and people are calling you, you know, crazy and eccentric, and it's like, no, you're creative. And,
wow.
You know, also, too, as an older person, when I meet kids, I'm talking about 10-year-olds, 16-year-olds, it's like, I'm older, but I've just been here longer than you. That's all. We're the same. We're the same. You know, and of course, as
very
they
well
talk
said.
To me, they realize it's like, no, you're cool. It's like, I'm cool because I'm like you. And so, you know, the idea is to introduce visual artists, you know, photographers and illustrators to a medium that they have not been exposed to before to see whether or not it means anything to them. And in the process, to introduce them to, well, the humanities through art. We're teaching them about local history through art. That's the general gist of the education aspect of this project. So there are five sculptures that are going to be enlarged. You know, the kids will come in for the workshops. We'll go to the different sites that are related to the subject. We'll go to the museums. And meanwhile, they get to watch a public artwork be created. A lot of people have never seen that done.
That's amazing. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now let's go back to the earlier stages of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with our listeners what was your first paid or your first commissioned sculptures that you did? You mentioned working on the Ella Fitzgerald statue, which is in Yonkers.
That was my first public artwork. It was a very unusual experience in that I asked for that. I had been sculpting for a year. When it occurred to me that I could make anything that I want, that's my gift. I have that kind of an eye. You know, by my seventh sculpture in my first 9 months of sculpting, I said, oh, I see. I can make anything I want to. I want to make statues. And the problem was that I wasn't seeing public art about Black culture. And it occurred to me that might be my job. And so I went to the mayor. You know, and at the time I was living in Yonkers, I went to the mayor. I was, you know, involved with a group of artists. I was a newspaper writer, and of course they knew me, so it made me easy to, you know, made it easy for me to talk to the mayor and to the planning commissioner and, you know, to the city council folks. And I said, you know, we only have dead presidents and war heroes here. Can we get something contemporary, something that's meaningful to the community? And they were like, well, what are you thinking? I'm like, I'm thinking Ella Fitzgerald. She grew up here in what is now the hood. You know, it's the projects now. But you know what? She's an international icon. She grew up here from age 2. She went to the schools here. There are people who were still living that knew her. That would matter.
And the other thing that you said that was very interesting in working on the African Rain Garden project is that it's a way to attract more people to Yonkers community.
Economic development. You got community development, and then you've got economic development. You know,
the other thing I want to quickly, because we're going all over the place, so bear with me as I bear with you, okay? I can only imagine how profound witnessing this sculpture of Ella through the eyes of a young child. To know that someone who grew up across the street from her, for instance, has become a global icon, and what that can do in terms of self-esteem and helping our young people believe and succeed.
Yes, it's true. Yonkers is the third largest city in New York State. It's the largest city in Westchester County, but it has a small town feel. And what was interesting is that Ella died while I was working on this public artwork, so it made the project timely.
Mm-hmm.
At the unveiling, there were these two little ladies who were crying that were her girlfriends. And,
wow.
Of course, the highest compliment was that they said to me, "You did her. It's her. You did her." They're really little old ladies, you know, in their 80s, you know, holding each other. And I looked at the sculpture, and that's when I understood the meaning of doing art in public places. That sculpture has been there since 1996. It has never been polished, and I can tell that people are engaging it because her hands are turning gold. You can tell that people put their arms around her to take photographs because her shoulders are turning gold. When
wow.
I was living out of state, people would call me and tell me, you know, the stars that are from Yonkers, you know, DMX and whomever, you know, they were here and they went down to the train station to take a picture with Ella. You know, they talk about the sculpture like it's a person. That says to me that the community is engaging the work. That's important. And it's the same thing with this new project. We had an exhibition to unveil the Rain Garden in September. I have never seen so many people cry, white people, black people. It didn't matter. The artwork and the subject matter really, really touched people. And for me, that's important because it means that my work is working.
And it's very, very meaningful and lasting.
Yes, it means something. It has impact.
Yes. And one of the things that I'd like to just share with the listeners is I've had a chance to look at the slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to blogtalkradio.com, the Antique E-Show, and see a slideshow of many of Miss Bagwell's creations. One that really touched me is the Frederick Douglass bust. Would you talk a little bit about the significance of that particular work of art?
Frederick Douglass is a full-body sculpture. Originally, it was designed for the northwest corner of Central Park. I did not win. I showed the artwork after the competition at the Strathmore Mansion in Rockville, Maryland, and the Frederick Douglass Museum assistant director called to tell me that she loved it. And I asked them if they'd like to babysit it while I was moving, and they said, yes, please. 3 months later, when I went to pick it up, they were in love with it, and they said, we really would like to figure out how to keep it. And I said, if you can find the money, I'll make another one just for you. Black Entertainment Television, BET, gave them the money, and there are two. There's one that I have, which is the original one, and there's another one that's at the Frederick Douglass Museum and Cultural Center in Highland Beach, Maryland. That was a very important piece to me because it gave me the opportunity to really learn who Frederick Douglass is. I read his speeches, and I love him. I mean, I genuinely love him. And of course, the highlight of that particular project was that Hofstra University decided to commission me to do the enlargement. So there's a big one out in Hempstead, Long Island. They wanted a public artwork to honor the history and the achievement and the aspirations of people of color. And, you know, I do portraits, and I said if I had to pick one person to represent me as a black person, Frederick Douglass would be my man. And I'm just like, and I'm very, very proud that he's there. And it was a very emotional unveiling because the students and the faculty were very grateful to have him. You know, Hofstra's and Arboretum, they've got now, I think, 72 sculptures. And this is the first one that represents people of color. So, you know, it's nice to see diversity. I mean, this is the whole point about having art in public places that represent people of color. There's not a lot of it of us just being people. You know, you'll see it in the name of diversity. You know, you'll see, you know, three soldiers. You'll have a black one, a white one, and a Hispanic one, and they call that diversity. It's like, why can't you just have a black soldier being a man? How about that? And so,
yeah,
you know, for me, it's just simply about trying to create art so people can get used to seeing black people being people as art in public places. It's very simple.
Well, I think we need to get a Frederick Douglass statue in Harlem. Leslie mentioned to me that there's a Frederick Douglass landing in Harlem, and it's the street he arrived when he escaped.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have to
well, you guys can be the godparents to that project. Let me know when you're ready.
We'll definitely have to look at, I mean,
I'm already a godmother to a project. I mean, I'm telling you, the Rain Garden project is requiring everything that I have. You know, I am not only creating the artwork. I am developing the funding for it. I'm a proposal writer, and I'm really, right now, I'm writing a $1 million proposal to the National Endowment of the Humanities. And, you know, I was at an exhibition opening this evening, and I was saying to someone, my job is to make them say yes, because we have to have this.
Mm-hmm.
And
where
of course,
do you find the time? I mean, that's interesting that you spoke to that, because that was one of my next questions was, you know, where do you find time? And even when we talk of time, I would speak to the energy that you must possess to be able to focus on that level of detail required to bring these sculptures to light and life.
This project is a full-time job. It's a full-time, I mean, every day. You know, people think when you're self-employed, you play. They're thinking, you know, summertime, you must be at the beach all the time, and you must be shopping, you must be hanging. It's like, no, it's really not like that. Particularly when you have the commitment and a passion to see something get done, be finished. And so I change my hats several times a day, you know. I might start off, you know, on the way to the kitchen to get some, you know, breakfast, and I might see something on a sculpture that I'm working on. I may stop and work for an hour on that, and then it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't finish writing that piece last night. Then I got to sit down and write, you know, another section to the grant. Then it's like, oh, wait, I should take a shower. I mean, it's an on-day, you know, all-day, you know, thing of being on. You know, people that know me know that I'm up at night, you know. If you're on Facebook, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning, like, what are you doing? I was like, what are you doing
right.
up?
Right, right.
It's like trying to get energy, trying to figure out what I'm supposed to be doing, listening, you know, for my instructions. You know, I genuinely believe that, you know, God and the ancestors and the angels and my family and everybody in heaven talks to me. It's like, can somebody please give me some instructions? I need some guidance. And so I am constantly petitioning God and anybody who can hear me to say, can you please help me figure out how to get this done? We must finish this. Now, of course, I have to tell you that there are a lot of folks that are applauding this particular effort. You know, I get all my lovely feedback on Facebook, but really, really, to be blunt, what we need is money.
Amen. Amen.
That's what
and
we need. Some days when I'm not feeling particularly, I'll just simply say, rested, you'll get blunt, Vinny. You know, and I'll tell them, you know, that's real nice, but did you write a check? You know, did you go online and make a contribution online?
Talk
you know, you can
cheap.
Do that. $5 will do it.
And let's put that out there.
This is why I'm going there. I'm saying, you know,
okay,
it's very
okay.
nice
well,
to be acknowledged. But it's not going to
get
done with talk.
That's right. And the importance, the significance of your work is obvious. And so what I would like to do is encourage our listeners, either live listeners or archive listeners to the show, to please visit EnslavedAfricansRainGarden.org. That's Enslaved Africans with an S, RainGarden.org. Look at the detail of these sculptures. Read the story and what the Enslaved Africans Rain Garden represents. And please, please, please consider making a contribution.
I want
Unfortunately,
to tell you,
there are more talkers than walkers, and we need to march.
I want them to understand also, too, just so you know, Arts Westchester is the Arts Council here in Westchester County. They are the fiscal administrator for this project. That money is tax deductible, of course, with inside the law. You know, so it's not like the money comes, you know, directly to me. The money comes through, you know, a nonprofit. You know, the Arts Council here is phenomenal. It's the largest arts council in New York State. They do phenomenal work here. And I have to say that it is a real pleasure and an honor to have them supporting this project.
I want to suggest this to you, Ms. Bagwell.
Yes,
number one,
yes.
We need to get corporations, we need to get celebrities, we need to get professional athletes to support your work. Let's call Oprah. We also
somebody
need
has
to have
her number.
Anybody
out there have her number?
If we put it out there, and people are exposed to the quality of your art,
yes,
they would want to contribute.
I hope.
I want to continue this dialogue. I want to invite you back to talk maybe a little bit about proposal and grant writing, because I'm starting youth movements all over the country, community by community. We have a handful of them. We'll have 10 by next year. It's really the way that we will make sure that the too many unfulfilled needs of our children become a greater fulfilled priority.
Yeah.
And so I would like to welcome you back to the show in the near future.
Well, thank you for having me.
And it was our honor, truly our honor. And again, I encourage people, even if you can't contribute financially, visit the website. You will be motivated to break the piggy bank.
Share the website. You know, you never know who's going to care. It's important that people learn about this particular aspect of American history.
Right. And I would encourage everyone to please go to the slideshow. That's also at blogtalkradio.com, the Antique E Show. Check out the incredible photos, the lifelike sculptors, and you will get a sense of the magnificence of the art and the artist. It's been an honor and pleasure to have you on tonight's show. Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Bagwell.
Well, thank you and good night.
You're very, very welcome, and we appreciate the quality of work that is you and that you represent. And I encourage everyone to go up to Yonkers and check it out as well.
It's not here yet. We'll have to keep you posted on it. This is a project that is still becoming.
Well, we're Facebook friends, so please keep us posted, okay?
All right, then. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Stay blessed and best, happy and healthy. I'd like to thank our listeners for joining us on tonight's episode of The Gist of Freedom is Faith. My name is Arlie Gordon. I hope that you will continue to listen in to our shows. We air Thursday nights as well as Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, you can go to blogtalkradio.com for Antique E Show. I would, as always, like to thank Leslie Gist Etheridge, who produces this show, to better connect today with our rich history, heritage, and culture. Thank you, Leslie. Blessings to all of you. Good night.
Of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, but then I am dreaming of a white Christmas, with every Christmas card I write. May your days, may your days be merry and bright. And may all your Christmases be white.
you how much fun it's gonna be together. This Christmas, fireside's blazing bright. We're caroling through the night. And cards are here. My world is filled with cheer and you. This Christmas, and as I look around, your eyes outshine the town they do. This Christmas, fireside is blazing bright. We're caroling through the night.
Dying there.